The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
March is marching higher. Mixed bag for economic reports. Eking out a gain for the week, 10 weeks in a row, and we're looking at the market from an X-ray standpoint. All this and much more on episode number 602 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And hello and welcome to March 2019. I'm Andrew Horowitz. I'm your host of the Disciplined Investor Podcast, as well as the co-host of DH Unplugged. Myself and John C. Dvorak come together each and every week talking about the crazier side of financial news, some of the offbeat things that go on a regular basis, and try to figure out what's actually going on and how to discern what it all means to us as people that are interested in the whole world of finance. So make sure to listen to DH Unplugged if you haven't done so. You can get that on Spotify, on Stitcher, on iTunes, or listen live on Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern time, where we stream the show live and have a chat room. Pretty cool. Well, I wanted to spend a little time today talking about what's going on with markets. Of course, you're interested in that. That's what we do here. We talk about the markets and finance, investments, all sorts of areas of taxes and estate planning and investment, the whole gamut of what's considered financial. So what happened last week? We saw that the Dow Jones Industrial, the S&P 500, the small caps, the NASDAQ, all up for the week again. Now, this is interesting because year to date, we're seeing quite the turnaround, which if you haven't noticed this, if you haven't seen the incredible move from the December lows, it's pretty astounding. But right now, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 11.5% year to date. The S&P is up 11.84%, the NASDAQ up 14%, and small caps are up a whopping 18% year to date. The VIX is down 46% so far this year. Now, what's interesting to note is that this was very similar to what we saw last year. There was a pretty big rise into the beginning of the year. We had the big lull and consolidation throughout the rest of the year. Couple of little areas of moving higher, moving lower. Of course, that 2017 February move lower. And then at the end of the year, that incredible drop off. Right now, we're seeing a bit of the same kind of move where whatever the significant move on a basis that has been, I would say, sharp, has been either retraced or it has seen a mirror move on the opposite side relatively just as quickly as either the rally or correction moved. So here we are in 2019. We're in March, 2 months into the year, and 2 months finished, about to enter 3 months, but 2 months finished into the year, and pretty much a good chunk of that significant correction has been eradicated. Just wiped off, done, gone, like it never even happened. And in fact, there's a lot of stocks hitting all-time highs once again, and even though the markets have not approached that level. So I think there's a lot to talk about. We're going to get into the whole idea of market profile and volume at price, because I think this is an indicator that we really can take a look at to understand what's happening, the X-ray of the market. The footprints of what traders are doing can be seen by looking at and studying volume. Now, with that, you probably have heard and seen a lot of people talking about how volume doesn't matter anymore. It just forget about it. Don't even look at it because it doesn't matter. You're just looking at price. I think that's partially true. I think that when I start to hear that this time is different, don't look at this or don't look at that, disregard this because this is the new thing that replaces that, it always makes me wonder, because eventually what we see is it always comes back to the same thing time and time again. Now, maybe there's differences in the market, and we have ETF investors out there that are able to buy full market baskets of a particular market or a sector or a specific area of the markets just by putting in money into an ETF, and maybe there's something there. We have extraordinary buybacks that are going on. Okay, maybe that's something there. But generally speaking, when we deal with the investment world and looking at specific technical analysis, it seems to me logical that we want to look at the volume, where traders are placing their bets and at what level. Are they doing this with conviction where they're putting a lot of money to work at a specific level? And that can be seen by volume. Can't really see that with things like an RSI. You can't see that with a McClellan or a Spearman. You can't see any of that and understand really how much conviction we are seeing with a specific move in a stock or a market in itself based on anything more than how much money somebody's willing to pay for it, the price, and how many units are they buying of that. That's volume. So we're going to get into that. Before we do, a few things to note, because upcoming we have some first-time guests scheduled to be on the show. Next week we have David Morgan from The Morgan Report. And following that, we just scheduled Ross Gerber from Gerber & Kowalski. So two new guests, fresh faces that will shed some light on their areas of expertise and what their views are in terms of the markets and the overall economics, etc. I also want to mention that if you want to see some of the strategies and take a look at and more information on the strategy that we manage for clients at Horowitz & Company, you can just go over to the disciplinedinvestor.com website. You can see the global allocations. You can take a look at what's happening and what's involved and some of the basics with the TDI managed growth strategy. And of course, Investology, our advisor-crafted technology-enhanced strategy that has a much lower minimum for entry. So something you may want to look into. So all those are available, some of the basics and some of the more information on each of those. If you're thinking about, hey, you know what? I want that guy Horowitz to consider managing my money. And there's all the disclaimers and things you need to understand and all of the ins and outs over there. So check that out over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. We're also going to be answering some questions today. This is just part of the opening warm-up. And I'll let you know that if you do have any questions, you can go over to the same site, thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And on the top, there's something that says Ask Andrew. All you have to do is click that and ask away. Whether it's a comment about the show, a question for clarification, something you want to know, we'll get to it on the show, or maybe even a guest suggestion. We'll do it there. So let's get into a little bit of a discussion about what happened during the week. The week that just passed, the week that ended February 2019. And, you know, when I was looking at this and I was thinking about what was going on last week, and then I looked back at the charts and some of the data and what was the news flow, I thought to myself, you know, this week that just passed reminded me of the week before, where we had a week that it was kind of slogging through some economic data, nothing really major the week before. There was headlines about China and this trade deal, and there was some discussion about this new, the number two, North Korea visit and possible deal that was going to be cut there. And there was a bunch of Fed speakers that marched out trying their best to cheerlead the markets on. There was all the same thing last week. There was a little bit more economics last week that were important. But we saw the markets basically take things in a stride and move through the week uninspired. And then on Friday, in order to get positive for the week, markets rallied pretty well from midday into the close. And this is exactly what happened, more pronounced, I think, this week, where at 12 o'clock in the afternoon, all of a sudden, there was a major bid with no news to really say why there was that bid. But there was a major bid for markets, and we saw that the markets turned green for the week by the end of the close on Friday. The S&P moved up about 20 handles from 12 p.m. into the close, 4 hours. So close to about 3/4 of 1% from the bottom to the top where it closed on the high for the day and managed to then, this happened, the same thing happened for the S&P small caps, for the NASDAQ, and for the Dow. Everything closed towards their highs, green for the week. Now we can ring the bell and say 10 weeks in a row, one of the best starts we've seen in years for the markets. And there's a lot of people that are still wondering, well, what does that mean? Because that whole massive correction that we saw back in October, November, December of last year, where is that? What was that about? What was the purpose? Why did it happen? And a lot of people are really worried that we're going to see the same thing again, a move to the highs or towards the highs. And then all of a sudden things are going to collapse, because if we look at all of the news out there, nothing's really changed. Even though the Fed has become a bit more dovish, or significantly more dovish, looking at the data to be reactive rather than a pre-prescribed course of rate hikes, nothing's changed. We still have all the things in place that were there before. We still have the Fed at the rate, at the level of Fed funds rates that we saw back in December. No, they're not raising right away, but they are still at those levels. We still see the balance sheet at the levels they were then that caused all this problem and concern and panic and liquidity issues. We still see the global economy slowing down. A couple of areas that are a little bit better than others, but generally speaking, still a bit of a slowdown on the global economics. So what has changed and why has it changed? And I think we've talked about this a few times, the whole idea that sentiment has changed. Sentiment is a big driver when it comes to markets. And what we're seeing now is that the sentiment change that has occurred since that low, that flush low on December 24th, is really pronounced and a lot of follow-through happening. But there was really nothing of substance that was behind last week's or the week before's move to the upside. But there is a trend change. Momentum is in favor of buying. But one of the things that I did see, and one of the things that I can't really quantify, but it feels like, this could be dangerous, but it feels like we are seeing the impact of buyback programs that are simply continuing to execute into markets at a regular pace. It feels like there's this machine-driven process that is continuing to buy, and especially when things drop off a little bit, and you see stocks come down and then all of a sudden they just crank higher throughout the day. It's like there's a trigger that occurs at a certain point when pricing starts to get a little soft and the buyback programs really kick in, because we're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars worth of buyback programs that are currently in force across hundreds of companies, and many of those are key and significant companies in terms of their impact on the indices. So think about Apple for a second. Apple's component of the S&P 500, the percentage weight in the NASDAQ 100, is significant. And if those buyback programs continue and just are running on a regular and almost automatic basis, there's a constant bid in that stock. Any selling that comes in and maybe even triggers a greater amount of buying that happens with the algorithms that are set to do the buybacks are probably having a reaction with markets. And investors know this. They know this because the companies have come out and they have talked about this ad nauseum. I mean, constant discussion about the buyback programs. And even when they're not, when we've seen in between earnings announcements, where you usually see the buyback announcement that is, it coordinates with the earnings announcement. Even in between earnings announcements, we're seeing a refresh of buybacks. And of course, a lot of this is due to the fact that it benefits the companies in a lot of ways. It's a very smart use of capital in terms of taxation, and moreover, the ability to artificially and financially engineer their earnings. It's a very simple equation. We're not going to go through it again because we've gone through it 100 times, but Basically, the buybacks enhance the earnings or EPS per share over time. So again, there was nothing of substance, but this constant buyback programs that are in place, they seem to be, from what I can see, can't quantify this exactly, but it seems to be a big part of what we're seeing in markets right now. Because we're also seeing little evidence that the retail investor has come back in full force at this point from a lot of different indications that we're seeing with regard to the money flows into various investments. And as such, if we're not seeing that, where is the money coming from? Now, one of the things I'm going to caution you about is that doesn't mean this is not a, quote, real move. You've heard of this, right? People, oh, wow, look at that. That move was just, oh, it was because of this reason or that reason. And what they try to do is discount the facts. The fact is that price moved higher. Let's get this straight. For anybody that is out there saying, wow, that move is just artificial. And if you're saying, Andrew, you just said that. Well, this buybacks, what are you talking about? If you're talking about this buybacks, aren't you kind of saying that it's not a real move? No. I'm just trying to give you some information here to understand that if it is in fact buybacks and they are continuing for some time, realize that there is a bid onto this market for a reason. Do I like that it's because of buybacks? Do I think that is sustainable forever? Absolutely not. However, it's a real move. You know, if you cut yourself with a butter knife, you may say, oh, yeah, you're bleeding, but it's not really real because it wasn't sharp, that knife. I mean, you really want to get cut, cut yourself with a steak knife. I mean, it doesn't matter. I know it's a bit crazy, but and a crazy way to look at it, but you're bleeding. And it's a fact. It doesn't matter how you did it, why you did it. You're bleeding. Markets moved up. So don't misunderstand this or think of this in any other way. Because sometimes I do hear this and people are really like, oh, it was low volume. And they try to discount whatever direction the move was in. The markets move up on low volume. Oh, yeah, it moved up, but on low volume. Well, let's say that it does that for 2 years. Where does that put you if you have a belief that the move was just artificial and really it wasn't true because volume wasn't there? There is some importance in volume. A matter of fact, there's a great deal of importance when it comes to volume. But either way, the move is true. As at the end of the day, it's price that matters. So let's delve into this a little bit further. This whole idea of the importance of volume and how that really should be looked at in the way I look at it. So the first thing I think that we need to know is that volume is a key component of it's the strength and conviction of buyers and sellers. Realize something, that both sides, buyers and sellers, are working every single trade. Doesn't that make sense? Right? There's a buyer and a seller. So every single trade, there's a buyer and a seller. So when there is big volume, when we look at this, not on a one lot deal. In other words, or one trade deal. We're looking at volume. It really gives us a bit of an x-ray into the significance of the price move. Low volume price moves are important, but they tell us a bit of a different story. One of the ways a technical analysis look at this is that price moves through levels that have a history of high volume are key areas. They're important levels that can provide some basis for the quality of the move. So what we're really talking about here is the quality, not the fact whether it's true or false or real or not real. We're talking about the quality of the move. So at the same time, a low volume move above a resistance area can be something that's very viable and something you want to look at and something that you want to focus on, assuming that the price stays above that key level and volume accumulates over time. So let's understand what I'm talking about here. So you have a situation where you can have a significant move above a key resistance, or take this as what I'm talking about, this below a support line, whatever you want to look at. But I'm going to talk about above a resistance level for the moment. What we're talking about is this whole idea that the determining factor of the quality of the moon can be seen in several ways. The bottom line is that whether you have a big volume spike on a one-day basis, a slow move over time when volume is accumulating above or under, you could look at, for example, the S&P 500 through the SPY. And right now what we're seeing here is that volume accumulation over the past 30 days has been very dense at the 279 level. Between 270 and 280, there's a kind of a sparse and spotty level of volume. But from 280 to 284, there's also an absence of any key volume. That's often called areas of gaps or holes. And price can move very quickly vertically through time in those kind of situations. So let me go back and kind of take you through this a little bit slower and understand what I'm saying here. What I'm saying is, traditionally, when you look at volume, you look at it per bar. When I say bar, that's a 30 minute, a 1 minute, a 5 minute, a daily, a weekly, a monthly. You look at these volume bars on a chart that are vertical up and down representations across time horizontally, and it gives you the daily accumulation of volume or the bar accumulation over the period, and that's all you see. So you say, okay, this bar, we had 200,000 volume, 300,000, 100,000, 500,000, whatever particular interval you're looking at. Now, what I look at is something different. I flip this whole thing on its side. And what I look at is volume accumulations at a particular price, not on a bar level. So I'm not just saying, okay, at 3:30 in the afternoon, the volume on this was that. No, that's not what I'm looking at. Because it only gives me the total volume. I don't know what volume and what price and where people were saying, hey, I'm buying here. So what I like to do is I accumulate every tick, every trade. Okay? I look at, well, how much of that price was paid and how many shares were traded, and add that. So 100 shares at 279, 100 shares at 278.75, 500 shares at 279, 22, et cetera. We add that all up. And we do that over a time period, let's say 30 bars. So when you do that, and then we take the, instead of looking at it across, we take it and flip it. We flip it 90 degrees. And now we have a representation overlaying a chart that could show me where those price levels are. If you haven't seen anything like this before, look up market profile. Market profile. And just go to Google and you'll see images so you can get an eyeball of what I'm talking about and how this looks. Now, what happens here is that I get this price accumulation that's ever moving over a period of time, and it shows me a visual representation on where price accumulation has been over a period of time, whatever that period is, that is the key levels of support resistance. So just focusing on the technical indicators with volume and price now, we can make a few assumptions, I think, related to the S&P 500 or this ETF, SPY. And if you look at a chart as I'm talking through this, or if not, imagine and visualize what I'm saying. When I talked about this before, I'm going to go back to this now and say that there was a volume accumulation over the past month that has been very significant at about the 279 level. Between 270 and 280, there was really not much volume there, and we're seeing a gapping area, an area that if in fact price starts to move through that, it can move and has moved very quickly over time. Oftentimes you'll see slow movement over time that isn't a consolidation. So you see horizontal movement over time above, between resistance and support. But once you get over those areas that there is very little volume and there's very little indications that people have been really placing their bets at those levels, oftentimes you see it vertically move, price vertically move very quickly over time. So now what we're seeing now is that a move about above about 281.75, rounded up to there, and we closed Friday at 280.42. So we're about $1.33 above where we are now. Sets up the potential for a move to about 284. This is the narrative as I'm looking at the chart. So we see a move above 281.75. There's a bit of a, there's an area of that's lacking any historical volume over the past 30 and 60 days, actually, that is significant. And therefore, that level is a key area that could see a move that is a rally move up to about the 284 level, because there's really no volume resistance above this key 281.75. Now, on the downside, or the support levels, and this is all volume-based numbers, looking at 278.92 around approximately as support, then congestion of volume between that level and 275. So there's been a lot of play through this level all the way down to 275. But below that, below the 275 level, there's once again a lack of conviction, a lack of volume-based support down to 270. So again, this is this whole market profile concept. It's different than things like RSI, MACD, stochastics, even moving averages. Whole different animal. Because what you can see at these levels, and when you draw these kinds of lines on a chart, they're giving you information based on what investors are actually doing. It's not telling you a trend. It's not giving you an arbitrary moving average point. It's not giving you an oscillator that just says, you know, a break above this on the short term and long term is a key level for momentum trade. This is actually giving you a, it's like looking down the beach and seeing all the footprints of where people walked. And you can see, if you look down the center, let's say there's a just a smoothing area because that's where everybody's been walking, and the outlier areas are where just a few people walk. This gives you insight into where traders are making and placing their bets, where they're putting their money to work, and where they're willing to say, this is the level that I am comfortable working with, investing at. And it also tells you when there is nothing there, oftentimes there are no participants that are really in those areas, and therefore it can be a level that is key to either launch or maybe even drop a position down through a price zone. So look up market profile. I think it's a really good educational level for you to look at. Some trading and charting packages have it built in different ways. But there are ways. We build these, I think I've told you this before, Trigger Charts builds these for TradeStation. The reason why these are built is because these are things that I like to look at when I'm looking at and understanding the dynamic and structure of a market or a stock. So take a look at market profile. I think it's a really important thing, this whole accumulation of volume at price. Now, many people have also been asking about, well, are we going to hit new highs? You know, getting away from the technicals for a second, getting into more of the concept of sentiment and fundamentals. And they wonder if, considering all that we know and all that we've seen and all that we are expecting, not we, me, I mean the big we, are we going to get to those all-time highs again? I mean, from a momentum standpoint, it looks like this is going to happen in the next couple of weeks. The momentum is definitely on the side of an up-move rally. But it's a great question, because I think sometimes the fundamentals and the reality don't always match up. Now, you know what I'm talking about. You've seen this before. So how many times, I mean, really, over history, how many times can you even think about all the major times? You can think of the 2000s. You can think about probably 2008, probably December of 2018, when the fundamentals and the technicals and the moves and the pricing doesn't match up. Something is either wrong to the upside or to the downside. So we did see, I think, the last time that there was a significant move to where the fundamentals and the reality didn't match up was probably December 24th. That major move down where there was a collapse of the markets after that significant volatility that was based on the worry that the Fed was just going to be a freight train just absolutely increasing rates under all conditions, regardless of what's going on. Earnings were falling off a cliff. China trade was going to hell in a handbasket. Europe was falling apart. Chinese markets and the economy were falling apart. And everybody was just throwing in the hat saying, all right, I'm done with this. I think that that was a time that there was clearly a mismatch of the fundamentals and the underlying reality of what was happening. And now what we're seeing is the resolution of that and possibly to a point that is in excess once again. Yes, I think that the current rally is a bit long in the tooth. I don't see a significant mismatch, but yet a mismatch into the levels that we have now, considering all the things that we do know that are going on out there. We do know that there is a slowdown on a global basis. We have seen that it is starting to creep its way into the United States. The last week's GDP, which we'll get to in a minute, is in the 2.5 range versus above the 3. We've seen already factory and manufacturing slow down a bit. Consumer confidence is obviously related to markets, and that has been rolling over. And not to mention that Italy's in a recession. Europe is slowing down. We're seeing that there has been the lowest level of GDP in China. Japan is having some issues. And the rest of the world is slowing down. And I think that the move that we've seen this year, which we talked about at the top of the show, these crazy moves of not only the indices, but of individual stocks, is seeming to be mismatched with where the outlook is over the next 12 to 18 months. I don't see the support necessarily globally or domestically for the levels that we're seeing in prices right now of stocks. And in fact, when you look at the outlook and guidance that has been provided for by many of the companies out there, I don't really see how there's a reality that is being expressed with stock prices. The reality that's being expressed right now seems to be that it was a temporary blip or glitch somehow with the markets in December and November. And everything's been resolved to a point that there is no longer a worry and shouldn't be about a slowdown of earnings and of economics. So, I mean, does that mean there's a massive, crazy correction sell-off in the cards? I mean, it's possible. But the more probable is that we're going to see a period of consolidation that will resolve itself one way or another, dependent on the realized outlook. Really, what happens with the economics, the slowdown, earnings, etc. And this is one of the reasons why we talked about this a few shows ago, the whole idea of looking at, understanding, learning about hedges and a variety of different hedge structures. And we've been holding a hedge in the TDI Managed Growth Strategy portfolios against core equity positions. However, what's important to note is we're not short. We're straddling both sides in order to be ready for either outcome. So easily, we realize that in an up market, if you hedge short, your short's going to lose money. Your hedge is going to lose money. Okay. But as long as you have a alternative and you're hedging against something, hopefully what's happening is while the hedge hurts you, your other positions are doing well. Until such a time that there is the opportunity to say, yes, I believe this is the time for one reason or the other, then you increase your hedge to a point that maybe you equalize your portfolio, or maybe go short, but equalize your portfolio positioning with that hedge. There's no reason to guess one way or the other until the time comes. So while we look at our hedge like, oh man, that's, you know, down X percent, and that's hurting our portfolio by, you know, this percentage or that. And if you have any hedges on in your portfolio, you say, oh, you know, my portfolio is up 8% this year as an example. And you know, my hedge is hurt that by 2%. If I didn't have the hedge, I'd be with the markets. That's not the point. The point is that it's okay to have a position that provides you some kind of a backstop against the market if, in fact, it does turn. And oftentimes, those hedges you want to put on in times when they're not working. Not when they are working, because usually that's too late. So you want to start increasing, or at least you want to start entering into the position slowly but surely as markets are moving against the hedge. Because you can't. Otherwise, you're going to try to think and time the market perfectly, and you're not going to be able to do that. So you want to start entering the hedge when markets are riding in the direction. And of course, you know, slowly but surely, if you are inclined to do so. And then what you do is you increase it into these areas that there are these mismatches. But again, realize it's not for the average investor. You have to really understand and educate yourself a little bit about this, because there's risk associated with these also, whether you do it through options or inverse ETFs, or you do it through short positions of stock, or you just build a cash position. But if you want to play both sides and you want to straddle, maybe you have the stocks that you've looked at and you've done your analysis on and you've done your due diligence and you've said, okay, these are the ones I really like, and how can I best hedge those? I have a high technology portfolio exposure, so maybe I'll hedge it with a short on the NASDAQ. Or maybe you say, well, I have a lot of utilities and staples. Well, maybe you want to look at a staple ETF and shorting that, or looking at some options opportunities there. So a lot of ways to do it. Listen to that show on hedging and you'll get the picture of what we're talking about on that area. Entering into the next area of discussion, we'll have to talk about, I think it's important to talk about the economics. I want to give you a quick down and dirty what happened last week and what we're expecting for this week as well. And then we'll get into some listener questions. All right. So what do we got here? All right. Let's look. Last week, so the week of the 25th through the 1st, we had some important areas of discussion, actually, on the whole idea of building permits and building starts and housing starts and the Case-Shiller. The Case-Shiller, which is the home price index of the 20 top cities. So the Case-Shiller 20 year-over-year number came in at 4.2%. What's the significance there? Well, that was much lower than analysts had expected, of 4.5%, less than last month's year-over-year, that was 4.8%. And the significance is here that housing prices are slowing down. The growth of the value of prices of houses are slowing down. It's still in a very nice, listen, I would be happy to have a 4% increase in home prices year-over-year infinitum. That'd be fine. I don't see any reason why not to have that. 5% is a little hot. 4%, even 3% is reasonable. Now, when we get into the negative territory, that's a problem. Now, if it's funny, because when we have these kinds of indicators, when we see that housing price is slowing and it's still growing, though, so we go from 4.8% to 4.2%, no big deal. It's still growing. A lot of you'll hear that. On the other hand, if we had like a negative 4.8% growth and now we have a negative 4.2, so a little bit better, if you will. Those people, oh, green shoots, things are getting better, and they get very excited and buy into it. There's definitely, there's a weird tendency for the silver lining to always play out in all this. So right now we're seeing that the Case-Shiller is still on a positive trajectory, but that is a little bit slower than has been. Consumer confidence came out. Also, we saw a really nice bounce back to the upside from 121 expectations for about 123. They came out and they were 131. Unfortunately, not all this is translating into consumer spending, but basically it does follow along. If you know what consumer confidence is all about these days, it used to be a little bit different. But these days, it's all about really the stock market. If you think about it, whatever the stock market does, pretty much consumer confidence plays right along. So that big drop-off that we saw last month has now been resolved because the markets have been up. On Wednesday, we saw a variety of items. The biggest one probably was the semi-annual discussion, the Humphrey Hawkins testimony by Fred Chair Powell. And he went in there and talked about the markets and the idea of, well, really the Fed and the fact that they're going to stay dovish and they'll do whatever they got to do, blah, 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 blah. On Thursday, we did see GDP. GDP came in at 2.6% on the advanced GDP for the month of fourth quarter. Recall, I said first quarter, so that's going to be coming up next in the next quarter. I thought that first quarter GDP is going to be the problem area where we're going to see some of the pull forward effect really play out in terms of a slowdown in manufacturing, because you got that continued ramp up into the 25% that everybody thought was going to be the case, and the 10% and 25% tariffs that have been in place. And therefore, now that we're not seeing an increase is where the, and everybody really didn't think there was going to be one, but after the first of the year, there was a hope of resolution and there was really no worry about this. It didn't seem like there's a big worry about an increase of 25%. And therefore, much of that advanced buying is probably going to be dissipated. So we did see that GDP came in at 2.6%, a little bit above consensus, but still lower than the 3.4 that we saw prior. What else did we see here? On Friday, we saw personal income, personal spending, and personal spending was down again. That kind of ties out pretty well with the retail sales, that horrible number we saw last week or the week before. Personal income was down a little bit also. ISM manufacturing number for February came out of 54. And that's dropping from 56 that we saw recently. And University of Michigan Sentiment Index actually came out a little bit lower than anticipated. The final one was 93.8, and it was last glimpse 95 and change. This week coming up, what do we have? A little bit lighter schedule overall for economic reports. We have the important level of construction spending on Monday. Tuesday, ISM non-manufacturing index, and that's I think that has a significance. New home sales also as well. Wednesday, ADP employment change will set us up for Friday, where we're going to see the non-farm payrolls and the unemployment rate. Expectations are for about 175-ish on the non-farm payrolls additions and a 3.9% unemployment rate. So those are things to watch for the week coming up. Let me find where I put, there it is, the listener questions that we have and go through some of these. Of course, you go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com, as I mentioned earlier, and ask a question by clicking the Ask Andrew button. This one comes in from Daniel Dorado. He says, "Hey, Andrew, I enjoy your podcast on hedging, and it reminded me of a recent discussion regarding tools available to the government. You mentioned QE as one of those tools that the government used during the downturn. Others include monetary policy, fiscal policy. Once we enter another trough, what options does the Fed have to regulate the economy since the above are no longer in effect due to a very low interest rate environment?" This is something, Dan, this is something that has been asked a lot, and why the Fed has been increasing rates and why they believe that they better get ahead of the curve here, because if they didn't, and in fact, there was another recession or a downturn in the economy that they would have to react to, that they couldn't do it. So when we look right now, we've noticed that there is a good amount of powder that they left dry. They still have the opportunity to continually do a further bond buying. They could definitely increase by another, couple of trillion dollars. Who cares at this point, right? They could do that and they could reduce interest rates. So the idea that the Fed is no longer available to, or they don't have any more available tools, I don't think that's necessarily right. I think a downturn will come either way, and their lowering interest rates will be of benefit, but it has to be a pretty significant downturn, I think, from an economic standpoint, not just market related. But you can see, even without an economic downturn, how fast they turned around off of their hawkish stance, because markets were not cooperating. And as such, the Fed is just a patsy for the markets, let's be honest. Sharon Masker asked if I have any transcripts. I read faster and remember more than when I listen. I can't believe you listen, you read faster than I talk, but we do not have transcripts. Sorry. Peter Winter writes in, he says, hey, Andrew, great podcast, and especially the one before Christmas during the Dow plunge. It was very timely, educational, informative, and most importantly, calming. My question. You sometimes trade and talk about three-time ETFs. I've heard you and others try to avoid those that are not a direct three times correlation. I would think that who cares, but what do you think? Also, in the recent DH, you mentioned UWT. Why do you pick that other over others as such as WTIU and USOU? Let's get to this. I think the meat of this question is the whole idea of these leveraged ETFs. There are some leveraged ETFs that I like to utilize for trading under certain circumstances, and some that I even hold for a period of time. For the most part, there are some of them, though, that have a very bad internal calculation and methodology, whereas essentially they're losers forever. I mean, maybe on a one-day or two-day basis, you could buy these things and make some money. And there are times that you have even maybe a longer period that you could do well with them. But generally speaking, a lot of these are constructed in a way that have a negative impact from rolling futures from one period to the next. And as such, you get yourself into a situation where if you hold it for a long period of time, they degrade substantially. And there's two times and one times and even just the inverse sometimes have problems also the single time. But some of the commodity names out there really are problematic. The VIX names, for example, very problematic. Some of the ones that are directly related to specific markets or indices, not as much of a problem. You could track them over time, and you notice they do track for a period of time that is reasonable. And I don't mind holding them for certain circumstances, like a hedge for certain circumstances. That, you know, if you want to be able to have a multitude of power in one position, but understanding that there could be a split from the performance of that and a couple percent over time. Again, it all depends on the vehicle. So just be careful and look at that, track that, calculate that, and see how that plays out to see if that is something that you're going to, it's going to work for you or not. So got a couple of other questions I answered directly through the email. If you do want to get in touch, you know how to do it at this point. I think we covered all the economics. We covered all the discussion of volume, et cetera. If you want to get more information about the whole market profile, go over to triggercharts.com. There's tons of videos there. And you can see what's happening and understand more about that. And you'll see the lines that go horizontally across the chart and the radar and something called altimeter. It gives you a whole breakdown of all that. I want to thank you for joining me. We'll have some great guests coming up next week. Make sure to stay tuned. And also, of course, tell your friends, tell your family, listen in. Go over to iTunes, grab this, subscribe, etc. Go over to disciplineinvestor.com and check out everything that's there. Thank you so much for joining me. I will see you next week. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training.